I've not failed. I've just found 10,000 ways that won't work. That is a famous saying by Thomas Edison. And he's onto something there, right? Because no one really wants to talk about failure. It's not something we really like talking about. Failure is not an option, is more of our mentality. And that phrase, of course, was minted in that Ron Howard film chronicling what happened with the Apollo 13 astronauts and ship on their way to the moon when they ran into trouble and had to go through this long, arduous, stressful period to get back to Earth safely. In that film, it starred Gene Kranz. He was the sort of the flight control guy. Ed Harris played Gene Kranz. And Kranz gave an interview talking about the movie and also what really happened in the command center. And he said, I was just telling the engineers, we had to figure out how to get Apollo 13 back safely. We had to bring those men home. We needed ideas and strategies from everybody, all hands on deck. Everything was welcome. Every idea was welcome, except failure. That was not one that was allowed to be taught. It gives you chills, right? When you think about those that remember that incredible story of the Apollo 13 and the way that those men were able to return home to their families. And when we witness incredible feats by humankind, like the Hail Mary thrown at the Appalachian State football game last night, it was amazing. I mean, it really is. It conjures up this sort of the best of us, right? And I say that in a good way. I'm not going to try to tear that down too much. But it really is a powerful thing to connect in with things that are extraordinary, or people overcoming the odds. And this could be when we're talking about musicians or actors or actresses or sports stars or writers or people that are in your own family, or maybe things that you've even overcome in your own life. It's incredibly powerful. And yet we know, right, that the idea that failure is not an option really isn't an option. It's really not an option, because all of us have hit some sort of failure in our lives. All of us have fallen short at different times. None of us, in other words, are perfect. Rachel Feistig, who writes an article once a week in the Wall Street Journal on living, it's an essay. She wrote an article this past week called Failure is an Option in Some Cases. And she writes about the intensity of today's culture. She says a recent study found that the average levels of social perfectionism, the sense that you have to show the world you're flawless, that you're perfect, among more than 41,000 college students surveyed, has increased by 30% from 1989 to 2016. To well over 2/3 of that group say that they have to show the world perfection. Over time, competition for education and jobs has ramped up, explained Thomas Curran, who's the lead author of the study. And he's a professor of psychology and behavioral science at the London School of Economics. Images of perfection fill our social media feeds, along with ads assuring us we wouldn't be so deficient if we just bought this new thing or tried this new product. Parents also contribute to this pressure by fearing that their kids will end up sliding down the socioeconomic ladder if they admit any weaknesses. Curran finishes this report by saying the whole fabric of society is held up on that notion of perfection. We cannot show any sense of inadequacy, and we are always looking to be told we are enough. That's pretty powerful, isn't it? A statement that the motivations and the participations in our society and our lives built around our society are trying to prove that we can't fail, that we're perfect, that we're above failure. Now, this seems a bit extreme, but just play it out in your head for a second. Have you ever failed? Of course you have. But do you really share that story with anybody? The Curran's report does seem extreme, but the reality is it's very much how we live our lives, right? It goes back to that simple illustration of the Christmas card. Nobody ever lists the previous year's failures on their Christmas card, right? It's always like helicopter skiing in Vancouver or something like that. It's not, look at our credit card debt year over year. I mean, we just don't do that, right? None of us do. And then if we do it, then we add in all kinds of caveats and we put it into, well, you need to understand where I was at that time. And that's what caused the failure. I do that all the time. I took an art history class at Renner College when I was on a quote unquote leave from Middlebury College. And for those who don't know, it wasn't a voluntary leave, okay? So there's already a failure built in there. And I had a busy week and I had studied like crazy for this test. It was one like slideshow on an old fashioned, you know, projector, and you had to write down like, you know, the sort of the artist and the period. And I knew the material pretty well, no doubt about it, but I stayed up really late studying and I went to sleep and I slept through my alarm. It's 11 o'clock class. I got up at like 11:30. I was, you know, 19. So anyway, we don't need to judge my sleeping habits at that point, but, I get down to the class. 2 minutes to spare. I'm like, just give me a couple. She said, sorry, we've already taken the test in. Let me just try one or two. Nope. No retakes. You failed. I was like, I failed. She was like, not only that, but if you read the syllabus, a failure in this class is a zero. I got a zero. I could never retake it. I was just sitting there trying to talk myself out of it. She's like, no way is this going to happen. I rarely like to tell that story. And I'm going to tell you how hard I was working the week before. And that's why it happened. Right? No, but when we do that, none of us really want to take that head on. Well, a teacher friend of mine said once, I don't fail any students, but some students earn enough. And I did. Right? Did. No doubt about it. And failure, though, is precisely where we pick up in the gospel today. If you notice that, right? It's failure. Jesus is telling a story about a landowner, or think about it in modern parlance, the bank president, who has a hired manager, aka senior loan officer, who isn't producing. Nice way to say he's failing. He's going to be fired. Have you ever been in that situation? Don't need to raise your hands. But you know the sinking feeling of being in the wrong place, or when that teacher says there's no retakes. It's a zero. You know that scarlet letter that sort of just gets seared on you in that moment. But you come up empty. You fail. And this loan officer feels it. So what's really interesting is what he begins to do. But what's even more interesting is what the bank president does. So what does the loan officer do? Well, he does sort of what we do when we fail. We start to try to manipulate it a little bit, right? We try to put context around it, or beg, borrow, and steal to get back in that art history class, or ask what we can do for extra credit, or anything we can to mitigate the failure. Well, he does that. He begins to just cut off the loans. I mean, he starts calling up local businesses and saying, I know you got that line of credit, you owe us X, just go ahead and shred that and put 50% less on. In other words, he begins to just knock off debts owed to the bank. In other words, if you want to put out about how sort of radical this move is, what this loan officer does, what this manager does, is he forgives the student loans. Just wait. It's not a sermon about public policy, please. Don't hear that at all. But it is a sermon about this radical nature of grace. And the radical nature that this manager is just giving stuff away. Because it starts to bring up stuff in you, right? It starts to make you nervous, unsure about what's going on. That's why that student loan forgiveness program is a perfect metaphor for this parable. perfect too, because my first reaction when I read that is, we paid off Ashley's loans early. It's what happens though, this response in a world that's so geared towards success and performance and has no ability to accept failure, no ability just be. Because to be and is an affront to how hard we've worked or something we've done. And that's what happens in this parable. Except it doesn't. Did you notice that? What does the bank president say? He commends the guy for giving away his money. Kyle Snodgrass, funny last name, but he's a brilliant New Testament theologian. He says this parable is one of the hardest parables in the world because if you really read it this way, you just want to throw the Bible out. It's like this guy is saying, way to go on giving away my money. What is that? He doesn't say like context to that. He commends it. Success, maybe through failure. Well, what we actually begin to see in this parable is we begin to see the arc of Jesus's own life in this parable. This parable is about Jesus. Robert Capon says, the unique contribution of this parable to our understanding of Jesus is the insistence that grace cannot come to the world through respectability, because respectability regards life in the matters of success and winning. Grace will have no traction, though this way of thinking will have no traction with the grace that works by death and losing, which is the only kind of grace there is. When we talk about the gospel, the good news of God, we're talking about God's failure by the world's standards, becoming your greatest success. We're talking about this grace that works through losing and death. Grace that turns the tables on everything you've ever thought about the world. This death on the cross is the single biggest failure in the history of mankind, because it is the moment where God allowed humanity to put him on the cross. When we all shout, crucify him, that mob attacks God and God hands God's self, God's son, over for death. Failure. And yet this failure wipes out all the scorecards. It resets the clock permanently for all of us. And so that we can finally realize that we can lay down our weary bodies and tombs. We can let go of the striving, our own internal judgments and our external judgments. And that there is an answer to Jeremiah's question, that there is a balm in Gilead. And it's the blood of Jesus that tore the temple in two, so that we could hear these words. Remember, the bank president commends the loan officer. God commends Jesus. Jesus commends us. Hear the words that you are my beloved. In each of you, God is well pleased.